This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
You sound hot.
From Beer of the Day World Headquarters in Elk Grove, California. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. Tonight we feature beers from Brewery Omegang in Cooperstown, New York. And we have 8 different beers to try, plus a strange brew from Almanac in San Francisco. My name is Dallas Helliker. Joining me tonight, Andy Hamilton, Steve Williamson, and from Pasadena on Skype, Jeff Miller.
Hey, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening. It's like, I don't know if this is evening, technically.
Early morning.
Early morning to you.
No, it's a quarter to midnight.
Late show.
The late show. Omegang beer, I'm looking forward to trying these, but before we get to that, let's see if anyone had any beers worth mentioning this week.
Yeah, so tonight I had a from Alesmith. You know, they have their Speedway Stout, which is a, you know, it's a very popular beer. It's a well-known, but they brewed a version that they call Hawaiian Speedway Stout, and it has some Kona coffee in it. And Dal was with me. We went down to Capital Beer and Tap here in Sacramento and tried it, and it was so good. It was very smooth and like velvety, and the coffee was not overpowering at all. It worked so well. It's actually one, it was 12%, I think it was.
Yeah, I think 12 and a half.
You could drink it all day long. It really went down pretty easy.
I think maybe one of the best imperial stouts I've ever had. It was so smooth and drinkable and just fantastic. I loved it. Can't Sounds speak great. Highly enough about it.
Better than Old Raspy?
It's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And Kona coffee I love. So, yeah. But it wasn't, you couldn't even tell it was too coffee. It was just a touch of it, which just really added a different character to it that really made it really good.
One thing for me that was nice is I didn't read the description on the board. I just knew it was the Hawaiian Speedway Stout. So I didn't know what the Hawaiian aspect was until I drank it.
You think it would be coconut or pineapple or something like that?
It could be any of those things. And so I tasted it. I'm like, oh, I kind of expected something sweet like that. And it wasn't that. And I was like, oh, this just got a coffee aspect. And then Dal pointed out the Kona coffee. It was excellent.
Yeah. And you hear Hawaiian and you're thinking pineapple. Yeah. But it wasn't that. It was just a little touch of coffee and really worked out well. Anyone have any other beers to mention?
Nope.
All right, let's get into the first Omegang beer of the day. And we have 2 to start out with. So this is one of those situations where the beers that we can get in Northern California are surprisingly different than the beers that we could get in Southern California. Jeff went shopping first, and he got 9 different Omegang beers, sent me a picture of them. Of the 9, I could only get 3 of them in Northern California. So we're going to mix and match here, and here in Northern California, we are going to do the wit. It's a wheat ale, 5.5%, and then Jeff's going to do the rare Vos amber ale, 6.5%.
This wit is the color of lemonade. You could
like real lemonade.
You could have poured juice into this glass. Yeah,
not the country time sugar packet.
And a lot of just foamy white head like the ocean surf.
Yeah.
And I could have bought this beer. I mean, I saw it at the store, but I thought my 9 Omegang beers I could find would be sufficient, but I didn't get that one. I could have. So I'm looking forward to what you guys think about it, because I missed out.
It should have been 10.
I think the initial taste is very citrusy, but then that mellows out instantly, and you just kind of get this kind of just crisp, dry.
I get like a real Belgian Belgian white flavor. You get that Belgian yeast smell. I'm not flavor, smell.
I don't get the aroma to me is very crisp. It's I don't get a lot of nuance to it.
I get a little citrus Belgian. It actually smells like a lot of beers when we were in Belgium. I got to smell on a lot of them. It's very like classic Belgian style.
You want me to get into my beer or wait or let you guys talk more about this one?
So I'll just echo what Steve said. This is so light tasting. You take a sip and there's just a little bit of lemon crispness and it just fades away.
If some of the wheat ales get a little, what I would call sugary and heavy. This is so light. It's super drinkable. I'm not a huge whipped beer fan, but I like this one.
It's not sugary at all. I would call it dry.
Yeah.
It's a very excellent. Dry flavor.
It's really, it's so light. Mm-hmm. It's so, but it's so much more better tasting than like light American beers.
Oh, yeah.
Like you could take this and replace anything that people drink, Coors Light, whatever.
Careful.
And it would be such an improvement.
I'll say that at this point in the show, this is my beer of the day.
One beer in, this is your beer of the day. All right, what do you got, Jeff?
How's that rare beer over there?
I'm going to say the same, being the first beer. I like this. So I'm having the Rare Vaz. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's, I guess, technically a Belgian ale and Belgian amber ale, which you don't see a lot of, I guess, in my mind. It's not quite a double. It has a little bit of flavor like an American amber ale, but definitely some Belgian spices to it. I like it. It's a solid beer. It's got a good mix of Belgian spices, but also some breadiness. It's a little dry, which I like. Color-wise, kind of a golden, amber, light copper color. Pretty highly carbonated. Was your guys' beer pretty highly carbonated?
I would say yes.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and it's got... Mine has some like clove, maybe coriander, orange peel, which I wouldn't expect from an amber ale. Maybe some banana flavor. So I like it. It's very drinkable. It's... Again, I'm not that familiar with a Belgian amber ale, but that's really what it is.
So it's your beer of the day so far, huh?
So far.
Good start.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. All right, we're going to move into the next beer of the day. This is the Hennepin. This is a farmhouse saison. 7.7%. And looking forward to this one.
It's going to take me a minute to open this.
Do you have the big bottle?
I do.
Yeah, check that out.
We have it in the 4-pack.
There it goes.
Wow. Woo. I don't know why, but I like that Owen Gang has all their beers corked, all their tall bottles, big bottles.
Yeah.
Something about a corked beer find it appealing.
I like it, but there's, I don't know. There's like a cost factor that
passed on to the consumer.
Yeah. So if it's all the same, then I'd rather just have it cheaper.
Well, so when I bought this beer, I could have bought the 4-pack and I did some quick math and I thought, you know, per ounce that this was a better deal price wise to get the big bottle. I don't know.
Well, at the store I went to, they only had it in the 4-pack. And then later on, I went to BevMo and they had it in the big bottle, but then they had two different labels on it, two different colors. And I couldn't find a difference between the two, the yellow and the green.
No different year or anything like that?
As I could tell, I don't know. I don't understand their labeling.
That's what I've been trying to figure out. Like I went to four different stores to get beer and every place had like a different color scheme with their labels. And I don't know if they just redid things. I mean, it was basically the same label, but slightly different colors. And for some of the beers, it's a different year, but I feel like for a lot of their beers, they just have changed the color that they use on their labels.
Like these labels were identical, but one was yellow and one was green, and the bottles on the shelf alternated. One green, and then the one behind it was yellow, and the one behind that was green. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, do I need to buy two of these to make sure that I get the same beer? And I didn't fall for it, but pretty good marketing scheme there, Oma Gang. Yeah, they almost got me to buy two of them.
They're getting all the podcast guys to buy an extra bottle.
Well, I mean, it's a different label. We got to try it.
But I did look at they have a bottled on date. And so for some of them that I found, you know, they were bottled in, say, June, and they were one color, and then bottled in October, and they were a different color. So I think maybe sometime last year they must have changed their labels.
Yeah, it must have been. So this one, it's slightly darker than the first one that we had, the Wit.
You'd say it's probably one shade up the scale there.
Yeah, but it's still a light golden color. It's not even golden. It's light yellow, and it has a ton of that white head, very foamy white head, which is great. I love that.
Both of them obviously had some cloudiness to them. These are definitely unfiltered.
Yeah. This one, it's a, you know, it's a farmhouse saison, and you're going to get some of like the funky flavors from that, but it's very reserved. I expect it is almost, it's very similar to the first beer, just a little dirtier. Does that make sense?
A little bit, a little more
earthy.
Yeah.
A little more substantive too. The first one was very, very light.
Yeah.
This has a little more body to it, which is great.
But at 7.7% for a farmhouse saison, a lot of those we've had, those are like your second on dirt, you know?
And this is pretty fruity. Like, I expected this to be a little more tart. It's not really tart at all, but there's a lot of fruit.
Even on the nose, I got a really good banana nose.
Yeah, banana.
You get banana, but in the taste, I get a little like apricot, something like that.
There's some like green apples.
You get kiwi. Kiwi's like the perfect descriptor, I think, for this.
It's kind of like a in between a green apple and a banana.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's good.
This is good. I feel like this is what a saison should taste like. The right amount of carbonation. It's very smooth. I like the 7.7%. It's pretty well masked.
Definitely well masked. You have three of these, and then you're going to be feeling it and thinking, what just happened? I was drinking these light beers.
It tastes a bit, though, like almost like a Belgian wheat beer. Like there's some wheat characteristics here.
Definitely. I think on all these first ones, there is that. It's a little bit more like some Hefeweizen characteristics. Like on a European Hefeweizen, you get a little of that apricot type of flavor, and I get some of that characteristic here too. So that's just kind of the wheat beer lending that in.
And it's pretty dry. I mean, both of these beers so far have been pretty dry, and I would say above average carbonation.
I get some of the I don't know if it's the fruit characteristics, but a little bit of like a sour at the end. Just a little hint, almost like you're drinking a sour beer.
I do get that. Yeah, a little bit.
I like it.
Yeah, that's very solid. Now let's get into the beer news of the day.
Couple of priorities first. I want to go kiss my wife and my kids. I want to go, you know, hug my family. I'm going to drink a lot of Budweiser tonight, Tracy. I promise you that.
So, we're recording this on the 13th of February, late at night. 6 days ago was the Super Bowl, and out of nowhere in the post-game interview, Peyton Manning decides to go ahead and give a free advertisement, you could say that, to Budweiser. And so there's basically there is a couple things about this that people have noticed, and then everybody else has been jumping on the publicity bandwagon on it. So first of all, according to Budweiser spokesperson Lisa Wesser, "Hi, Internet. For the record, Budweiser did not pay Peyton Manning to mention Budweiser tonight. We are surprised and delighted that he did."
Don't believe it.
Number two, $3.2 million. That's how much Peyton Manning's references to Budweiser are worth to the beer company in free advertisement, according to MarketWatch.com.
Also how much he pocketed under the table.
Peyton Manning owns shares in two Anheuser-Busch InBev wholesalers in his native Louisiana. So he has a little bit of interest in it.
A vested interest.
This wasn't the first time Manning brought up Bud after a victory. After the 2014 playoff win, Manning said in a news conference, "What's weighing on my mind is how soon I can get a Bud Light in my mouth." So it's not a new thing. And number five, NFL players aren't supposed to endorse alcoholic products, according to the league rules. The NFL has its own beer deal. Bud Light has signed the agreement to continue sponsoring the NFL through 2022 Super Bowl. The NFL will get $1.4 billion from Bud Light. But basically, he's not supposed to be endorsing a product. Retired athletes can endorse alcoholic products. So maybe that's a clue. People are speculating that maybe
I was done 3 minutes ago.
Right.
I don't think it was intentional. If that's the beer he drinks, he was just saying he's going to go have a beer. Well, we would say the same thing.
Yeah. I think he could have got away with it no matter what. It would have been a bigger issue with the NFL if he didn't say a Bud product. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's who their deal is with.
Yeah.
If he was trying to screw that up, then that's a different story.
Right.
Go have a but he wouldn't Avery do that. Brewing Company.
Yeah.
So Left Hand Brewing Company is offering a free pint of beer in exchange for an empty bottle or can of Budweiser in its tasting room. So as a result of this, the Craft Brewers Association, publishers of craftbeer.com, put together a care package for Peyton Manning that includes one, two, three, four, about 12 different beers. They gave him the Black Bavarian from Sprecher Brewing Company in Glendale, a lot of Denver area beers, Apricot Blonde, Upslope, Colorado Kolsch, Racer 5, Sam Adams Boston Lager, Mojo IPA from Boulder Beer Company, Sawtooth, Session Premium. So they came up with a care package and sent him these beers. And to see, let him know, hey, maybe there's something else you can try instead of just drinking Budweiser. So that was pretty cool. So now on a more serious note, John Taffer came out with an article this week, and he is best known for his role on Spike TV's Bar Rescue. And I'll just read his quotes here. "I find the whole craft beer craze fascinating. A lot of the core beer brands in America, Budweiser, Coors, etc., have taken a real hit from it. Some of these brands, they've never lost market share in their entire existence. They're scared by it, so they panic and turn executives over. Craft beer has created a culture, not a trend. A trend grabs market share and then disappears and gives it back. A culture grabs market share and then keeps it. The craft beer culture isn't going anywhere in America. That said, I think about 60% of craft beer basically sucks. I've been to a lot of facilities. They're not exactly clean. They're rookie run. The problem is people are now looking at craft beer as an investment opportunity. They're getting into it to make money. Many people don't get into it for the love of making beer. Of course, that's not how it began. Jim Cook founded Boston Beer because he loves to make beer. But today it's more in the investment space. That's why I think there's going to be a washout in craft beer over the next 2 years. Half the craft breweries are going to disappear, and the word craft will become known more for spirits." Pretty harsh words, strong words. It's touching on things we've talked about lately. We talked about the word craft beer last week.
Yep.
And if that still applies anymore. We've talked about the huge increase in craft breweries. We have more now than we ever had before. We've talked about quality. Sometimes you don't get the best quality. Sometimes, when they're new upstarts, whatever. And we've seen this here and a lot of places where people are starting them more for the investment opportunity and not for making great beer.
Right. And I think that, you know, I watch his show, so I know a little bit about him. And I think he looks at it like a restaurant, because that's the specialty is bars and restaurants, right? But if you look at a brewery, it's not a restaurant. It's distributing its product all over the place, right? A restaurant's just serving the people within its community. And with any industry, you're going to have good and bad producers of product. And the bad ones will get weeded out eventually. That's just the way it is.
There's plenty of bad restaurants as well.
There are, and they don't last very long.
Right, exactly.
But I think a bad craft brewery could last a lot longer than a bad restaurant.
I don't know about that. I think that, you know, it's capitalist. This is the, you thrive based on the quality of your product.
Right.
I mean, you have a good product, you're going to make it. You have a bad product, you're probably not
going to
make it.
I agree with his statement that it's a culture, not a trend, but there is also a trend going on where if you're a craft brewer, you're selling a ton of beer. To the people that can get it.
What's the investment? I don't quite understand what he thinks the investment is. I mean, it takes a lot of investment to start a brewery, and then, you know, people aren't buying stock in you. You're not a public company. You know, you
can start a brewery relatively cheap. I mean, it's cheaper than opening a McDonald's or a Burger King or anything like that, you know,
Do you think that his saying that it's an investment is these people hoping to get bought out by the macro companies and they're going to sell for $1 billion.
Exactly.
But if you have, you know, crap beer, that's not going to happen.
Right. But if you can make good beer, I think, you know, look at St. Archer is a great example because they came to the scene with a bunch of investment money to start. Their whole idea was to build the brewery, get some distribution and sell. And that's exactly what they did. And they made decent beer. So for far as I'm concerned, that's fine. If that's what they want to do. You're not going to be able to do that if you make bad beer. Nobody's going to buy you.
Yeah.
You need to have a product to sell.
Exactly.
I think he has some, you know, very valid points. I mean, he's a little harsh, but he has some valid points, and the investment piece is definitely there. I don't know that half of the craft breweries are going to close, but it definitely at times seems like the market's a little saturated. Like, you know,
he's saying it's a bubble, you know, like the housing market, like eventually it's going to crumble down.
It has to.
I don't know if it's a bubble, but like, you know, being in California, there's so many breweries, so many new ones that open all the time.
Well, they're not all gonna
I don't know
it.
That there is the market to support it. I mean, I go to a ton of breweries and some of them, they make pretty good beer, but there's just not enough people to support all of these places. So some of these are going to go out of business. There's right. no doubt.
That's when that's the bubble. Like right now they're not going out of business because there's the demand for it. And then at some point the demand's going to filter to the good breweries, the people that like, you know, that's how it's going to work.
And that's fine. I mean, some of the places can close down. I don't know that half are going to close down. But it seems like we're kind of at a peak where I don't know how many more new breweries can open without other ones shutting down.
That's true. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. I think that the last 2 years have been so interesting to watch the changes in the market, and it's been a crazy soap opera in beer. And I think the next 2 years are going to be just as exciting. So it's going to be definitely something to keep our eye on. All right, well, let's get into the next beer.
Yeah, there it goes.
We each got a big bottle, huh?
This is the Abbey Ale. This is a Belgian style double, 8.2%. And we keep climbing the ladder here. Yep.
Looks like a Belgian to me. Nice kind of light brown color.
Yeah, a little. It's quite has some orange in it. And then the head is a light tan color.
Yeah, very light tan.
I'd say the color is pretty dark. It's almost like a reddish color as well.
It's like reddish orange and quite cloudy.
It's got that smell you'd expect from a Belgian. It's got that kind of molassesy, kind of bready. You can smell the yeast.
Yeah.
You can also smell a little bit of orange in it, I think, though. Like a little
orange, maybe a little pumpkin. I get a little bit.
Give it a sip here. A lot more sour than I would expect. Honestly, it's not overly sour. It's just...
Yeah.
I would expect sweeter. I would expect it to be more on the sweet side.
So, I would too. And before I opened this, I looked at the bottle and it says what's in here. and it's different. You know, you think of a Abbey style ale, you know, that's going to be like your Trappist beers. You know, this isn't a Trappist brewery. And actually we haven't talked about that, but this is one of the original sellouts. This is one of the first beer, craft brewers to sell to a major beer company. Where was I going with this?
Who bought them?
Duvel.
Oh yeah, you're right. Duvel.
I don't remember where I was going. You're gonna have to.
You were saying, traditional Belgian.
So I mean, on the appearance, I actually had a Trappist Roquefort 8 last night, which it looks similar. It's a little lighter in color, a little redder, and the mouthfeel is the same. You know, you expect a lot of those same qualities, but then you get these things like licorice root, star anise, sweet orange peel, coriander, and cumin. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to be putting in this beer.
When they call it Abbey Ale, you think they're going to make a traditional Belgian double Abbey Ale. And this one, they've tried to switch it up a little bit. It's a little more experimental.
Could you say it's overly crafted? When craft beer goes wrong?
No, it's not a bad beer, but you know, Dallas and I went to Belgium last year. We had a lot of beers, and this doesn't taste like any double that I had in Belgium. It's fine. It's not bad. It just doesn't taste like a Belgian double to me.
The very base character of the beer is there. Mm-hmm. It seems like they tried to be a little too creative on top of that.
This beer needs to be had with cheese or chocolate, I would say. Like, it would be more enjoyable that way.
And this is probably one of their, I don't know, what's their flagship beer? Probably Three Philosophers. I think this is one of their more prominent beers.
I've seen this one at several stores. I saw Three Philosophers at every store I went to. That's their only one a lot of the time. Three Philosophers we'll be closing the show out with.
I think this is a really interesting beer in the fact that it's not a bad beer. It's just it's not what you're thinking it's gonna be from the label.
Yeah. I think if you read the cursive on the bottom, you would expect this beer. Yeah. But if you just read Abbey Double, not what you expect.
I wonder how many beers I've tried that use that anise and the licorice root, because it's a flavor that I think that's in this that I am not very used to in a beer.
Yeah.
And it adds a kind of an interesting quality to it.
It's kind of a medicinal flavor.
Yeah.
True. But of the things that you mentioned, you can get carried away with those in a beer.
Well, I mean, those are all everything that Andy read on that label. They're all powerful flavors.
Yeah. And
but they play well together in this beer because it's not, like you said, it's not a bad beer. It's just not what you expect.
I think I've seen beers that overdo it on each of those things that are in this beer.
Yeah.
And they have kept it to a minimum and tried to get those to play together. And I think it's experimental. I don't think it was a complete failure. I just think when you see Abbey Ale, it sets something in your mind where mm-hmm. this is not what I was expecting.
They should call it an experimental Abbey Ale. Like, you know, play that up.
If they had called it that, I think it would rate higher in my book.
I agree.
But I think as I have more of this, it's more complex than I think we're giving it credit for. I mean,
I think it's definitely complex.
Yeah.
It's complex. I appreciate there's kind of like a rich, like the mouthfeel is pretty creamy. And there's a lot of other flavors. I mean, there's some fruit flavors. I think there's even some toffee flavors. I mean, it's a pretty complex beer. It's just not your traditional Belgian double.
It definitely is not. All right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, we have our Strange Brew segment with a beer from Almanac Beer Company in San Francisco. And then four more beers from Brewery Omegang in New York. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Beer of the Day podcast. All right, if you enjoy Beer of the Day, the website and this podcast, and you want to help us out, you can do so by shopping on Amazon. And to do that, you go to the Beer of the Day website, you click the Amazon banner, You do your regular shopping and it doesn't cost you a single penny more, but we get a little bit of a kickback, a little bit of commission on what you spend. For example, someone just last week bought Allergy's allergen barrier pillow protectors. Now, these things protect you from experiencing an allergic reaction to what is inside your pillow. And it seems like a great idea to me. And for $14.99, they picked these things up and we got 90 cents from it. This must be the biggest purchase we've ever benefited from. 90 cents. That's almost a dollar. And that's a dollar that's going to be going towards beer on future podcasts that we're going to try. We have to buy all this Oma Gang beer at $14.99 a pop. It gets expensive. We have the website hosting, bandwidth. We have our services that we provide to send the beer of the day to you on email or text message if you sign up on the Beer of the Day site. So a lot of expenses here at Beer of the Day. You can help us out by shopping on Amazon. Click the banner or go to amazon.beeroftheday.com in your browser. It'll take you to Amazon. You do your shopping. You help us. All right, let's get back to the show. We have our Strange Brew segment. We have from Almanac, Paris of the West. I'm looking forward to this one. Welcome back to the show. We have from Almanac, Paris of the West, 9.5%. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. We've actually had it a few times on shows that we were too drunk to actually release to the public. But this time, I think this is the time. We're actually going to do this thing.
The good thing is that I don't remember anything about it.
I've never had this beer, so it's going to be too drunk. I wasn't there.
It's going to be a beer de triomphe.
Sure. Oh, listen, look at that. A French joke.
That's in Paris of the West.
The Beer de Triomphe.
So this is a Belgian quad, 9.5%. Very dark in color.
Yeah, it looks Belgian quad-y.
A pretty thin head.
Thin, lightly carbonated. As he poured it, I was, compared to all these Oma Gang beers we've had, yes, very lightly carbonated.
Yeah. Basically flat.
Everything else had a very thick head on it, you know, like an inch. And this is maybe 2 millimeters.
I'll be interested to get to the Three Philosophers and compare it to that as far as the carbonation goes. Because when you get into the triples and quads, you're going to lose carbonation. That's just the way it works.
I'll bet you a dollar that Three Philosophers has more head on it.
Sure.
All right.
Bet's on. I don't think I'm going to win.
This is recorded.
Yes. So what are flame raisins?
I believe it's a raisin that was done on a charcoal grill.
See, you're a produce guy, but raisins really aren't
never heard of flame raisins.
It's so dried produce.
I know. So that's not his section of the store.
Yeah, it's just in a little box.
A flamed raisin. It's got to be something, a raisin you set on fire, right?
No, I think it's like a type of raisin.
I don't think so.
It's not flame.
So it's a variety. Flame.
Maybe.
You look it up?
Flame raisins are made from flame grapes, which are seedless reds that mature earlier than Thompson grapes do. They are the sweetest raisins so far that you can buy, making them a good snacking choice.
Couldn't agree more. This is great raisins in here.
Grape raisins.
Great raisins in here.
So I'm looking at this bottle, and it has flame raisins, candy sugar, and oranges. I get the raisins. I get a lot of other fruits like dates and fig.
A lot of dark fruit, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like plum. I don't get any orange. Like the fact that there's oranges in here, I don't get any orange.
Orange can just be kind of more of a, you know, sour or sweet kind of a balancing thing, though. It doesn't necessarily be a big flavor.
I get a little of a, like a well-ripened orange. where you don't taste any of, there's no sour aspects. It's just the juice, the essence of the juice. It's not the pulp. It's not the sourness. There's none of that.
I like this beer a lot. It's very smooth, very well balanced.
It's smooth. It's not as thick as I would expect for a quad. It's, I don't want to call it watery, but it's a little thin on the mouthfeel. But the 9.5%, it's there. It's not boozy.
And it's not heavy either.
I think it's
not
heavy. Pretty reserved for 9.5. The dark fruits are very prevalent to me. I think it's a great tasting beer. I don't have any problems with this.
Yeah, it took an adjustment because all of the Omegang beers did have a lot of carbonation. So the first sip was a huge like, oh wait, this doesn't, it's not that. Mm-hmm. But after, you know, the third sip, you get over that. And you taste, you know, this is a quality beer. It has a lot of nuance to it. And I think it's a good representation of the style.
Yeah. For a Belgian quad with raisins. So it has those Belgian characteristics, but it's very raisin heavy on the flavor. I get a lot of that.
This does seem more like a very traditional Belgian.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Incoming transmission.
You've got mail.
Comments this week. The big comment came from our buddy Rich. Oh, Buckeye Nut. A couple of weeks ago, we did a podcast on Cincinnati beers. So Britton and Joel were in Cincinnati. They brought back some beer with them from Cincinnati and around the Ohio area. And Rich says, just listened on the way to work this morning while stuck in traffic. Yes, we have it occasionally in Ohio. Another great listen. Fatheads is a great place and has some fantastic food too. A bit surprised that my invitation got lost for this Ohio brew tour. Next time you are in the heart of it all, give me a shout and the first one's on me. Even if I have to drive the entire 3 hours to get to either end of the state. We'll take you up on that, Rich, next time we're in Ohio. And Unidragon, Clown Shoes does that because our antiquated liquor laws, ABV limit in Ohio is 12%. Lawmakers are trying to get that to 21%, but nothing is passed yet. Thanks, as always, for an entertaining drive to work. Go Bucks! So, yeah, we figured out that story with our chat with Filthy Phil Thomas from Clown Shoes. But yeah, on the Clown Shoes show last week. Whenever we're in the Cincinnati area, Rich will look you up. And we've actually started talking about figuring out what California beers we're going to put into our California beer box to send to you. So we can kind of share some California beers with you. All right. Let's get into the next one here.
Oh, yeah.
So, Omegang, I think most people that haven't heard of them before knows of them now because of their partnership with Game of Thrones, the TV show.
Great marketing strategy.
And they have come out with, I think, 5 different Game of Thrones beers so far, and they're continuing this. And the one we've tried several of them on the podcast before, Valar Morghulis and
Three-Eyed Raven. Take the Black Stout.
And tonight we're going to try the Iron Throne. Now, this was one of their first ones they came out with in this Game of Thrones series, but they have re-released it. And in like 3 stores around the Sacramento area, they had Iron Throne, and here it is. So in Southern California, Jeff could not get this. So he's sitting this one out. But we have Iron Throne.
I guarantee like 2 weeks from now, I'm going to see it everywhere.
This is a Belgian pale.
First thing I noticed right away is we're back to the, you know, the head, the amount of head on the beer. Difference here.
Now, I will say that all the Game of Thrones beers we had.
Outro.
I will say that with all the Game of Thrones beers we had, I haven't been a big fan. And it kind of was a knock to Omegang because, you know, I've had some stuff from them and that I enjoyed, and those were kind of mediocre. So, you know, it would be nice if they had some better Game of Thrones beers. Maybe with the next season, they'll come up with something good.
Hopefully. New season comes out April 24th.
Oh, free HBO plug there.
Hey, I'll plug anything. Best show on television.
I think that the nose on this is almost a... I mean, I know that Andy and I used to drink a lot of Chimay.
Yeah.
And so you just have those Belgian styles, and that's very much what it reminded me of right away. But then with like an American flair to it, like you almost get like a domestic, you know, when you put your nose into a domestic beer here and you kind of get that little kind of spiciness. Yeah. So I wonder if it's going to have that kind of cross taste as well.
It doesn't. It's very like very sweet.
It's quite sweet.
Initially sweet, but not lingering.
Yeah, it has that, it's kind of a light Belgian ale, but it has an abbreviated taste where there's a little crispness in the aftertaste where it kind of cuts it off and says, all right, that's good enough.
Boy, I don't know. This could be a macro brew to me. If they bottled some macro brews, pumped a little extra carbonation in here, I could be, that's kind of what I'm drinking right now.
It does remind me of like the Duvel, their, you know, Belgian ale, the one that you see everywhere. It does remind me of that in a lot of ways. It's not, that's not a sweet beer like this, but the aroma, the appearance, mouthfeel are all very similar.
The white bottle with the red lettering?
Yes, that one.
Yeah, it actually is pretty similar to that. I have to say, I think this kind of falls in line with the other ones.
Exactly like, what I was going to say.
Like, I think
there's a mediocrity to it.
I think it falls a little behind the other Omegang beers we've had tonight. So, and I remember like Valar Morghulis.
Right.
That one was a Belgian double. And I remember it just lacking. It just lacked that it factor. And, you know, if you're going to have a beer and sell it based on the popularity of a show and it's going to move off the shelves, obviously. Yeah,
maybe. And that's a good point, is maybe they take the beers that they didn't love and they slap the Game of Thrones label on them to sell, whereas the rest of their beers are very good.
Yeah, but
they don't need the extra marketing.
Right, but if you're going to capitalize on this huge market share thing, why not use a good beer?
Well, it seems like you'd want your best beers to have this label on them, because then that's going to lead people into your other, you know, brand and what you represent.
Right. If we had these and they were great, then we'd be a huge fan of Omegang.
We'd want to try every Omegang beer.
Yeah, but if you're trying to from a business plan, you don't want to brew a beer and call it something that in 25 years nobody's going to remember. You know? You don't want to take that route.
We're going
to
remember.
Otherwise, you have to rebrand things as you go along, which does happen.
Yeah.
We talked to Clown Shoes last week. They rebrand things. They're rebranding a lot of their product line. But this is, you know, this is a bigger brewery than them. It's corporate run.
For different reasons, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, not my favorite beer.
Nope.
Okay, well, let's get to the next one. So this is the next split test. We have Soothsayer up in Northern California. Soothsayer is a Belgian style dark ale. This one really looks the best to me. Like by the bottle, like I really see this, I'm like, I want to have this one. Jeff has the Nomegang. You see that? They took Omegang and they put a GN in front of it and it became Nomegang.
Best name out of all these beers, I think.
Nomegang Blonde. So we're at 8.9%. Jeff's up at 9.5%.
So I'll go first because I started drinking this while you guys had your last beer. And so I'm drinking the Nomegang. It's a blonde ale. This is an excellent beer. This is my favorite so far tonight. 9.5%. It's strong. It's not boozy, but it's strong. It's got a lot of like citrus flavors, some honey, maybe some peach flavors. Same as all the rest. Like, it's kind of dry, highly carbonated. It tastes a bit like a triple. Like, if I just had this, I don't know that I'd call it a blonde ale. It tastes a lot like a Belgian triple. But mine is phenomenal. This is a very delicious beer.
Sounds good.
Does sound really good. I'd want to try that one.
Now, is this one Soothsayer or Soothsayer?
Soothsayer.
What's the difference?
I don't know.
All right.
Soothe.
I just like saying soothe.
Well, there's no E, so it's Sooth.
So this is one, definitely the darkest beer we've had tonight. It is dark brown, a little amber highlights coming through on the edges.
Very dark, though.
Ton of head.
Do you think that a brewery would have a niche where they say we want very dry and very highly carbonated beers, and that's like what they want to go for? Seems like it'd be a strange thing to focus on, but
no,
it's been a trend.
But I would say that with all breweries of this size, you identify them one way or another. It's either the yeast they use, the way they carbonate their beers. Like Rogue is very identifiable. Sierra Nevada is
free range coastal waters.
Is a free range coastal water and the Pacman yeast. Yep. Had to get that plug in here on the. But I think with breweries where they produce all these different beers that we drink all the time, there's identifiable characteristics of their beer, and I think that the carbonation is one for them. I would say with the style, though, you're also in general going to get higher carbonation.
Yeah, true.
That's true.
Yeah, and it's like most of their every brew we've had tonight has been kind of a Belgian style, which lends itself to that.
Yeah,
that's true. When we were at Claremont a month ago, we would comment on the carbonation and say, oh, this one doesn't have very much carbonation, but they would say, we're only doing small pours right off the keg.
Yeah.
And the smaller size makes it less carbonation. Now, most of the beers tonight are big bottles, and I think that leads to bigger carbonation. However, the first two beers we had, the Wit and the Hennepin, were also highly carbonated, so it doesn't really apply.
Once it's more than an ounce, I don't think that really applies. It's just when they do the quick, the quick deal, an ounce or two. I think that's kind of where the, and also with the taps, you got forced carbonation. You're running CO2 lines, where that plays into it a lot more. These are bottle conditioned, I would assume, and the carbonation comes naturally.
So, what do you think about this beer?
I really like it.
I do too.
It has some. If it was such a thing as cinnamon dark chocolate, it's not the bitterness of the dark chocolate, but the flavor and the cinnamon like kind of mixed together. I wouldn't call it like a cinnamon spice. It's just the flavor,
Yeah, and it's very touchy. You're getting kind of a dark roasted malt characteristic, and then just a subtle amount of cinnamon and a subtle amount of
sweetness. Yeah,
of sweetness. It's really so balanced. It's fantastic. If I'm going to say dark ale, Belgian dark, this fits the style perfectly.
It does. It's amazing.
Yeah, it does. When I hear dark in a beer, I do think it's kind of a muted beer where it's not going to have a lot of bold flavors, and that is what's going on here. I mean, it's very smooth and easy to drink, but I almost want a little more flavor. This is almost too smooth for me. It's almost like it's very easy to drink. I don't want to make it sound bad. It's just I'm not getting a lot out of it.
I think that this is the most Belgian authentic beer that we've had so far, where you mentioned the Roquefort 8.
Yeah.
And we earlier in the show we talked about beers that we had in Belgium, and this tastes like, if I was to taste that there, I don't think I would say, oh, this is an American beer from New York.
Right.
I think this is really authentic, true to the style.
And I do like this beer. I don't want to sound negative here, but I think if you put this up and you took a sip of Roquefort 8, there would be no comparison to you. I think that you'd then say, eh, maybe I'm not quite right about that.
It's like, it's a little darker though. This is a little maltier. It's a different animal than Roquefort.
It is.
That's more like Belgian triple.
Yeah.
And this is more it's darker.
And I would say that the Roquefort is more of this is natural. This is an example of the perfect example of the style where it's not adding any other flavors, you know. And this one has a lot more of like the dark malt and that's a little cinnamon characteristic.
They're adding to it to get the type of beer to darken it.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that the fact that we are comparing this to that
is good.
Says a lot for this beer. The fact that we're having to compare this to like one of the best Belgian beers in the world.
My favorite beer in the world. That's still to this day is my favorite beer in the world. Yeah.
The fact that that's the comparison says a lot for Omegang on this beer. Jeff, you want to have any final thoughts on Nomegang?
I really like it. I had more of this. It's got kind of Steve. If you had this would be your pick of the beer of the day for sure.
I don't doubt it.
It's got this kind of like honey, banana, a little bit of lemon. It's like got all these flavors that you would really enjoy. So I like this blonde ale a lot. So I wish you guys had this.
All right. Well, next time we're in Southern California, we'll have to pick it up. Omegang, maybe a little bit more even on the distribution here. 9 beers in Southern California, 5 up here.
Hey, we're still part of California, Omegang.
Maybe it's so popular up here they sold out.
No.
Didn't think so.
They checked the inventory, like what they had before and not, and that's not the case. All right, well, let's move into the last beer of the night. This is the beer that they have everywhere. Southern California, Northern California, Beverages and More, Total Wine and More, the regular grocery store. Every place has 3 philosophers. Jeff was able to get 3 different years of 3 philosophers.
That's true. So tonight we're going to drink the current version, the 2015. As I pour this, I was able to get the 2011 and the 2013, which I was surprised. You know, 2011 especially is 5 years ago. So I have those in my vault. And on a future show, we will do a vertical tasting. We'll buy another one of these 2015 versions, and we'll do a vertical tasting of several years of 3 philosophers. But tonight we're going to try the most current version.
It must be an odd year only thing, huh?
Maybe, yeah, it was weird.
Maybe we ate till 17 and we do 11, 13, 15, 17.
Maybe. But Steve, it's funny. I assume they make this every year, and I got 2011, 2013, 2015.
What it is, it leaves you something to look forward to in the years that the Giants aren't going to win the World Series.
It does.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'll bring these up to you guys. We'll do a tasting of 3 of these, maybe 4, side by side.
Speaking of baseball, we haven't even brought this up, where Omegang is located.
Yeah, at the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Cooperstown.
They're not at the Hall of Fame.
No, I think they have a little,
same town.
They have like a golf cart there that like they sell beer out of.
It's Cooperstown. It's his town.
But isn't that like the home of baseball?
Yeah.
Is that where baseball was invented?
I don't know. I doubt it. It was probably invented by the Romans in the mid-5th century.
In the Colosseum?
Yeah.
Well, and they have a Cooperstown beer about baseball. I've never had it, but Omegang makes that. If we ever see it, they have I don't even know what kind of beer it is, but they have a Cooperstown.
I bet it's Belgian.
Well, all those Omegang people listening to us on the podcast, if you ever want to send us any beer, feel free to do so. The address is on the website.
We won't refuse it. Well, getting to this 3 philosophers, I'm actually really looking forward to it. It smells great. I think it has a very nice a pour. I mean, that was, it wasn't that overly crazy amount of carbonation and head the other ones had. It was just a nice amount. Nice brown color, and it just smells, it smells sweet and bready, like a Belgian. Like, that's what you want to get out of it.
It's a little lighter brown. It's with a tinge of orange to it. It's not as dark as that last couple of beers.
My problem with Three Philosophers is that it's just too many opinions.
Because you're always right.
Exactly. I'll be my own philosopher.
I do like this label. It's kind of like a James Bond-esque label. I like this.
It is.
It is, right? Like every Bond movie, the intro, it's kind of got that silhouette.
It's the beer Bond.
Yeah.
Except he's holding a beer up, looking at it, trying to determine what year it is, as opposed to. But yeah, the backsplash also has guys looking at beer. It's definitely Bond-esque.
This is a sipper. Like, this is sitting on your patio, sipping this beer.
Absolutely.
I just had a sip of this. I get a lot of the cherries. I looked at the label. It's got 2% cherries added. I don't know what that means exactly.
They're like 2% fat milk cherries.
But I definitely get the cherry flavor. But it's smooth. This is, so going back to the Paris of the West, this is a little bit thicker, a little heavier. The mouthfeel is a little more carbonated, as you would expect.
Not as dark, though, and not as raisiny.
No,
not at all. Much more fruity.
They're similar, but the other one is a little more darker. This is more like traditional Belgian.
There's still a lot of figgy characteristics I get out of this.
It does.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't get the darkness. I don't get that dark, like, kind of fig.
I do. Cherry, fig, dates, all that's plums, for sure.
I think that the cherry specifically has given me kind of a, I mentioned earlier some of the other earlier ones, but a sour quality, and it to the point where I get that kind of little bit of like water in my mouth, like that. It's kind of like the back of your throat. Yeah, there's some water in there. Some twinge. You get a sour.
Cherry is one, like, cherry beverage is one of my favorite things. When you see something that has cherry in it, I love to give it a shot. But a lot of times with the beer, it's just so much cherry, and that's cool. But this one is more like, it's just an ingredient in the whole process. Instead of making it a cherry flavored beer, it's a beer that is brewed with cherries, and it's very, it all just works so well together. We've had a lot of beers tonight where there's all these different ingredients and they really balance against each other very well.
I will say that for all the beers we've had tonight, no one flavor has been very dominant. You're like, with the exception, I think, of this one, to me, I will say that I think this is a kind of cherry forward, in my opinion.
Well, I'm glad they did 2% because 3% would have been too much. It's a pretty tame night, I would say, for us.
It's funny, it is a tame night, and lately we do the show, and afterwards it's a work for me to want to drink all the rest of the beer, which we have a lot left tonight because these are big bottles. There's not that many people here, but I'm actually really looking forward to it right now.
Jeff is saying, you know what, you have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I got my good, I don't even know what you call these things, but I stick them in the bottle. Stopper. Keeps the beer pretty fresh. So tomorrow I will finish these.
Today is tomorrow.
You're right.
Later today.
And if you want to buy some of those, you can buy it on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website.
That's where I bought them, actually. Well, this is a very good beer. I enjoy this. I am looking forward to trying our vertical tasting someday in the future.
Me too. All right, Andy, let's recap the beers we had tonight, and we'll figure out what our favorite beer of the day is.
Yeah, so we started off with the Wit Wheat Ale here, and then Jeff had the Rare Vaz Amber Ale. Then we had the Hennepin Farmhouse Saison, the Abbey Ale Double, and then we came back from our commercial with the Paris of the West Belgian Quad from Almanac Beer Company.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had four more game Omegang beers. We had the Game of Thrones Iron Throne Belgian Pale Ale, the Soothsayer Belgian Style Dark Ale, the Nomagang Blonde Ale, and then we finish it off with the Three Philosophers Quadruple Ale.
All right, let's spin the wheel here and figure out who's going to go first. Can't see the wheel. Who is it?
Oh, Andy.
Of course, the time I can't pick, I'm the first to go. So, wow, this is tough. I'm going to start off with the Whit Wheaton. Ah! No, that's not what I. That's not my choice.
Not mine either.
It's very defensive there.
That was an excellent beer. That was a drinker you could have any day and you'll enjoy it. You know, we're out of football season now, but it's definitely a football beer.
Or a baseball beer
from Cooperstown, New York.
But I'm going to go with the Soothsayer Belgian Style Dark Ale. That beer, I don't know, it just did it for me. It really, I really enjoy Belgian style beers. That's really a style of beer that I look for and I'll try. And I actually look over Omegang a lot just because, I don't know. They have the Game of Thrones beers have really put me off. Like, I don't want to spend $15 on a bottle of beer that I don't think I'm going to like, based on the Game of Thrones beers that I have already had. But all these other examples that were not Game of Thrones beers were very good. Worth your money. You will, even if you don't like the style of beer, you will enjoy the craft that went into making them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I following up with that, I wish they would scrap this Game of Thrones thing because it's a great show, great novels, and they're giving it a bad name with this beer. Like, I mean, just concentrate on what you're doing well, and you guys are doing a good job with the, all your other brews.
But they can sell so much more.
I know, and I'm sure they're making a killing on it. So, you know, do your thing. Two beers really stood out to me tonight, and only one of them was Omegang. The other one was the Paris of the West Quad. That was so drinkable. I really liked that a lot. But what stood out to me most tonight was the shockingly Whit Wheat Ale. That was so, so good. It was very drinkable. It had a great flavor. It wasn't like you're drinking nothing. I mean, you could tell you were drinking a beer, and it wasn't. But it was that, you know, very enjoyable wit beer that you could drink all
day.
It's
the kind of beer, you know, you get people that don't drink beer and they go with like the Shock Top and the whatever, Hefeweizen. This is a beer you can give to somebody and say, hey, this is a craft beer. Try this.
And
they'll like it.
Good flavor, good complexity.
Great flavor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Dal.
All right. I am going to concur with Andy. A lot of good beers tonight. I have to say, my secondary mention, Farmhouse Saison, mm-hmm. quite good.
Yeah, it was.
Low on funk, completely 7.7%, unnoticeable, drinkable, really good. Enjoyed that a lot. It was a lot like that Whit Wheat, but just a little more body to it, little more substance, and I enjoyed that a lot. But I have to say, Soothsayer, Belgian Style Dark Ale. For us to be comparing that to Roquefort 8 and the best Belgian beers, I mean, I'd say that Brewery Omegang, they're trying to have a Belgian-style brewery. They're trying to do this in the Belgian way. And most of their beers have Belgian influences. This one, to me, is the best that they've done at imitating that style and complementing that style. And so I enjoyed that one a lot, and I'll have to try that again for sure. So, Soothsayer.
All right. Last but not least. So I'm disappointed that I did not get to try the Soothsayer because two of you guys picked that. I will keep looking.
Jeff, I will buy a bottle of it next time I'm at the store and save that for you so you can have it at another time.
Awesome. I would like to try it. I will say that every beer we had tonight was good. Brewery Omegang, I would classify all of these beers as very high quality. They were all, you know, just tasty beers. There was not a single beer tonight that disappointed us. They were all good. I think if we had eight people on the show, we might get eight different beers chosen as the beer of the day.
That's for sure. Yes.
So everything was good, high quality. I'm very impressed. It's not a huge place, but they do a very, very good take on the Belgian style, and most of their beers are Belgian styles. So overall, very good. My pick for the day, beer of the day, is the Hennepin, the farmhouse saison. Dallas mentioned that was probably his second choice.
Yep.
Not having the soothsayer, this is my pick for today. I think Andy was spot on with his kiwi description. That was good. It had some like clove and banana flavor that I really enjoyed. I don't drink a lot of saisons, but that was a phenomenal beer. So delicious. 7.7%. I kind of wish I bought the 4-pack instead of the one big bottle. But I will buy this again. For me, this was the best beer today. So Hennepin for me.
All right. All right, that's going to close out our Oma Gang show. We thank you for tuning in to the program tonight and invite you to check out our website, beeroftheday.com. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/thebeeroftheday. Abby and Adam are San Diego reps. Were down there today touring five different San Diego breweries, and they were posting on Facebook, on Instagram, at Beer of the Day site, on Twitter, at Beer of the Day. We'll see you next week. For Jeff Miller, Andy Hamilton, Steve Williamson, I'm Dallas Hellicker. We'll see you next time on the Beer of the Day podcast.